zero when he get dough, it's horrible. Time is money, spend, wait, save, invest, a fest. The 10K, a cave, a chicken chest, S. Yes, y'all are double, get your trickles. The best ballers pitch in and rub to get a nickels. But tut tut, he bout to change the price again. It go up each time, he blow up like hydrogen. Villain here, album's shrilling in fear. It won't stop top bill until he a gazillionaire. Villain, his agenda is clear. Ending this year with dividends to spare here. A new meaning to sales through the roof. Guaranteed.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. Joining us now is Sarah Anderson, who directs the Global Economy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies. Sarah is the lead author of 20 annual executive excess reports and serves on the investment subcommittees of the U.S. State Department's Advisory Committee on International Economic Policy. Her books include Field Guide to the Global Economy and Alternatives to Economic Globalization. And she has an article at the Huffington Post, Derailing the High-Speed Trading Bullet Train Before It Crashes Our Economy. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sarah Anderson.
Thanks for having me.
And 4 years ago on May the 6th, 2010, the Dow Jones Industrial Average suffered its huge nosedive, losing $1 trillion in a blink of an eye. And did they ever finally figure out what happened there? I mean, I'm not even sure there. We know it was because of high-speed trading and et cetera, but was there ever a definitive explanation for what happened?
Unbelievably, no. For 4 years now, people have been arguing about what was the actual trigger for this. It is widely accepted, though, that the high-frequency traders accelerated the plunge because they withdrew from the market very quickly. But it goes to show you how much of a black box the stock market really is, that people have been arguing for 4 years now about what actually happened on May 6, 2010.
Well, of course, it's come into the public consciousness, at least for those who watch 60 Minutes, with Michael Lewis, the author of the new book, Flash Boys, saying on 60 Minutes that the market is rigged. That was a real attention getter. What's your sense of that being a wake-up call?
Well, Michael Lewis is a brilliant writer, and thank goodness we have someone who can take this highly technical, rather obscure issue and turn it into this dramatic page-turning book, Flash Boys, that's character-driven and kind of, you know, lures people in with a good story, and through that helps educate so many people about this issue. There wasn't a lot in the book that was really brand new, but coming out saying and explaining with such detail how these high-frequency traders are rigging the system has certainly put more pressure on policymakers to do something about it. I mean, describing how one of these bankers from Canada, who is way more sophisticated than you or I are when it comes to financial markets, and kind of walking through how he came to realize that even he was really being cheated by these companies that specialize in programming these very sophisticated computers with their algorithms, and programming them to make these thousands, if not millions, of trades a day, having nothing to do with the real economy, but just exploiting slight discrepancies in prices between exchanges and running circles around ordinary investors by having an edge in terms of how quickly they get information and using that to manipulate prices. So it really has gone a long way to help people understand this problem.
But what these high-speed trading guys do, the flash boys that have this advantage, is they actually against the law. It's called front-running, right? That's the irony of this.
Well, the New York Attorney General is doing a big investigation right now of high-frequency trading, and did start before the Michael Lewis book came out, so he doesn't get full credit for it. But it sounds like a very serious investigation into the legality of this. Is this just another form of insider trading? And apparently they're issuing subpoenas left and right and kind of shaking things up. And I really applaud that, because otherwise, for 4 years now, since the flash crash, we haven't seen any real action on this, nothing beyond just some small band-aids put on the problem, tinkering with circuit breakers and whatnot, but not really addressing the cause of the flash crash, which, you know, back on that day, May 6, 2010, the markets did rebound by the end of the day, but it was very unnerving because it happened at a point that was kind of a lucky time of day when other global markets weren't open, and so it didn't spread. We were able able to contain it. But since then, there have been other mini flash crashes and really nothing done that can restore confidence in the markets that kind of crazy crash isn't going to happen again. And then there's just the day-in, day-out ways that these high-frequency traders are draining profits from other more traditional investors.
But when I talk about front running, which is against the law, that is when you get inside information that somebody's about to buy something, then you buy it ahead of them, and therefore they have to pay a little bit more for it, and that's your profit, right?
Yeah, and the way that these high-frequency traders are able to do this, one of the ways anyway, is that they pay for the privilege of locating their computer server closer to the market exchanges, so close that they get this split-second edge over other investors. It sounds crazy, and it's so hard for the mind to wrap around just how quickly these computers are able to react and to take advantage of the split second in timing. And one thing that I like to point out is that it takes a human being 300 to 400 milliseconds to blink their eye. These computers are so sophisticated, they can send and respond to trading information in the span of 10 milliseconds. So 300 milliseconds to blink your eye, they can act in 10 milliseconds. It's faster than the human brain can function, and so they are able to get in there and help, you know, drive trends in the market. They do what's called quote stuffing, which is they'll send out massive buy orders to try to get people to think, oh, there's big demand for whatever financial instrument that is, but then quickly cancel all of those orders after other people have come in and they've influenced others' behavior. So it seems obvious. For years, it seemed obvious that they are rigging this system and that it's of questionable legality. The Michael Lewis book has really popularized it, raised it to a whole other level of attention, which is just fantastic. And we're finally seeing a real debate now about what should be done about it.
So my understanding is that the control of the stock exchange and all trading by computers has become ubiquitous. It's not just that you have this legalized front running by these high-speed computers that can see somebody else is about to buy something and in less, as you say, less than the blink of an eye, less than the flap of a hummingbird's wing, they are able to buy ahead of it and sell it back. And that should be illegal. And apparently the New York Attorney General Schneiderman is looking into that. But my understanding, what I find even more troubling here is that almost all of the trading now of these vast volumes of derivatives by these high-speed traders is computerized. It's almost on autopilot. In fact, it is on autopilot. And the outstanding derivatives, do you know what the latest figure is? It's like mind-boggling. It's like thousands of times the annual GDP of the United States, that there's this vast kind of amorphous, somewhat abstract bubble out there in the ether that they're trading all these things via computer and making little nickel and dime profits on billions and billions of stuff, all of which is somewhat abstract, isn't it?
Absolutely. They're adding absolutely no value to the broader economy. These computers don't even know what they're buying and selling. It has nothing to do with the value of the corporations. They could be buying, you know, toxic toys or, you know, anything that's bad for society. It doesn't matter. They're just trying to exploit these microscopic differences in prices on different exchanges. It's all a big game. They claim that what they're the benefit that they're bringing is liquidity, that by, you know, making sure that when people want to buy something, there's someone there to sell it. When people want to sell something, there's a buyer there, that they're kind of oiling this whole machine of the financial system and keeping it running more smoothly. When the reality is, when you really need liquidity is in a crisis moment, and the high-frequency traders are the ones most likely to take their liquidity away because they're programmed to get in front of trends. And so the liquidity argument is what they bring up over and over again to make up for the fact that it's clear they're not adding any real value to society. And, you know, the question is, how do we control this situation? A cause of this is we have this fragmentation of the markets. There's 14 different exchanges now. There's all these dark pools. And they exploit the price discrepancies between these exchanges. And so it's thinking about how to monitor and rein in this high-frequency trading is very complicated, very expensive. So the idea for dealing with this issue that I'm most excited about would be to put a small tax on each of these trades. That way, people who are doing sort of normal levels of trading would be hardly affected. We're talking about a tax of a small fraction of a percent, whereas these high-frequency traders that are doing these stock flippings millions, thousands of times a day and trying to pick up pennies on each trade, they're the ones who would be hardest hit for it. And we are seeing a lot of momentum, I think, behind this idea of a financial transaction tax. In Europe, there are 11 governments that have come together that say they're going to implement the first regional financial transaction tax. I understand that the Treasury Department here is at least taking a look at this among, you know, a list of options they're considering for dealing with high-frequency trading. And that way we could also raise a lot of money off of this industry. It would discourage the short-term trading, but also bring in some revenue from the financial sector that could be used to invest in the real economy.
Well, how about using some of that revenue to fund the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Commodities Futures and Trading Commission oversight? I mean, this is how the Republicans basically enable theft, and this is not to let Clinton off the hook for getting rid of Glass-Steagall, but they continually, in their budgets, cut enforcement at the SEC and at the CTFC, which means that more and more shenanigans can go on, and above and beyond what Michael Lewis is talking about in terms of flash boys and the rigged stock exchange. So, but my understanding is these 11 European countries, they're negotiating what will be the first regional financial transaction tax. Apparently, the tax is on the table is 0.1% on stock and bond trades and 0.01% on derivative transactions, and they estimate that this very, very small tax will raise $42 billion per year. I bet you if you applied it to the U.S. Stock Exchange, it would raise considerably more.
Absolutely. A slightly different version of this has been introduced in the U.S. Congress, and one estimate that's been done by the part of Congress that's responsible for coming up with these revenue estimates says that over 10 years, we could raise $350 billion through a very small tax. And again, for ordinary people who aren't out there, flipping derivatives millions of times a day, the cost of this would be negligible. I mean, compared to some of the sales taxes that we pay for basic products that we need for our lives, these derivatives trades are not taxed at all right now. And so it seems like a no-brainer to me that a small tax like this could go a long way to get the financial sector back to the role that it really should be playing, which is investing in the real economy, helping to create productive, job-creating companies, investing for the long-term health of this country instead of perpetuating this casino.
So do you know, Sarah Anderson, the exact number of outstanding derivatives and swaps? I was trying to think of it a minute ago. I'd heard it's as big as 700 trillion.
I remember it was some number that I just couldn't really fathom.
Right.
You're right. It is many, many times larger than our GNP. And so what it basically means is that, all these many years since the 2008 crisis, the financial sector is still really dominating our economy, driving our economy. We're all aware of how much influence Wall Street still has here in Washington over our policymakers. And we really need to find a way to turn the tables here and make sure that the real economy, which is where people, you know, make their livelihoods, find the basic goods that they need for a dignified life, that takes priority. And these high-frequency traders, I mean, another issue here is that many of the people involved in that part of the financial sector are brilliant, talented people who were trained to be mathematicians and meteorologists and physics, PhDs and so forth, people who could be doing so many things that really could contribute value to our society. And instead, they're being lured away by these, you know, humongous paychecks to program these computers to do this nonsense all day.
Well, but this is nonsense that already, as we started out, Sarah Anderson, 4 years ago, on May the 6th, $1 trillion evaporated in less than the blink of an eye. And nobody still to this day knows why. And we were lucky that it happened at a time during the day when it didn't trigger a global chain reaction through other markets. Mm-hmm. So if you have, with the $700 trillion or whatever the number is, of these derivatives and swaps going on all the time by automation through high-speed trading computers, this sort of, you know, zombie universe of money being made out of nothing, that if something triggered some major chain reaction within those computers, as happened 4 years ago, it's the same argument about the too big to fail banks. Since 2008, the banks have even gotten too bigger to fail. So my sense is that this flash crash could be a harbinger of a much worse flash crash to come.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's not just me. We've had, you know, commissioners for the CFTC, the regulatory body in charge of commodities and futures trading that have been raising alarm bells about this for years. There was a major academic study done on the flash crash that said that we dodged a bullet last time, but we might not the next time. And so it's really imperative, I think, that people get engaged in this debate. And I think that one thing that Wall Street has to its advantage is all of this stuff can be so complicated and so technical. And, you know, when I started researching this, I must confess I developed a little dictionary for myself of all of these terms I was so unfamiliar with, and I was having so much trouble, you know, plowing through the information. But it's complicated for a reason. They don't want us to really completely understand it. They want us to feel disempowered and not jump into this debate because we don't know all the terminology. And I think people really need to be encouraged to step in here and say that we need a financial sector that serves the rest of us, and this high-frequency trading is not doing it. We've seen a lot of progress in this. If you look at the people who are campaigning for this idea of a financial transaction tax, the nurses union has gotten really involved, and hundreds of nurses will come here to Washington to lobby on this. So I think, you know, that's just one example of how we have come quite a ways since 2008 in terms of ordinary Americans seeing that they have a voice on these financial issues. But I understand it can still be very intimidating, and we really need to get around that and just insist that our elected representatives do what's best for the people and not keep listening to these phony arguments about the benefits of this high-frequency trading. It's just nonsense.
Just in closing, just last week, the Dow Jones reached a record high level on the stock market, highest level ever. And my understanding is that 90% of trades nowadays are high-frequency trades. So the machine has taken over.
Absolutely. And you see that, you know, unemployment is still in crisis here. People are dropping out of the labor force because they're discouraged. Small businesses are having trouble getting access to credit because a lot of the money is, you know, so much more lucrative to do this kind of gambling instead of investing in companies that are really built to last for the long term. And so we really have some messed up priorities in this country, Ian. I hate to say it, but there are some concrete things people could be doing. And I think supporting this small tax on trading is just a no-brainer. The financial sector is very undertaxed, and by having a small tax, we could really encourage more of the kind of long-term investment we need to turn this economy around.
Well, Sarah Anderson, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Sarah Anderson, who directs the Global Economy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies. Sarah is lead author on 20 annual executive excess reports and serves on the Investment Subcommittee of the U.S. State Department's Advisory Committee on International Economic Policy. Her books include Field Guide to the Global Economy and Alternatives to Economic Globalization. And she has an article at the Huffington Post, Derailing the High-Speed Trading Bullet Train Before It Crashes Our Economy. We're going to take a brief station break and we're back looking into the Supreme Court decision on the separation of church and state.